HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 197, recorded live Wednesday, January 27th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks about the DLR with Iron Ruby Program Manager Jimmy Shimeni.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And this week, I'm up on campus at Microsoft, and I'm sitting here in Building 41 with the one and only Jimmy Shimeni. How are you, sir?
Pretty good, Scott. How are you?
I'm well.
Good.
You, sir, are the PM, Program Manager, for Iron Ruby and also Iron Python right now.
That's me.
So I am here in your office, a lovely office you have here, a small windowless office in the middle of the bowels of the beast.
My cave.
That is Building 41. And I want to know what's the status of the DLR, the Dynamic Language Runtime. What's up?
So the Dynamic Language Runtime was announced 3 years ago or whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Sounds about
as
right.
As a runtime for dynamic languages on the CLR. Mm-hmm. What it's turned into is a platform that actually C# and VB have built upon. So to either remind or cue in listeners, the Dynamic Language Runtime language-specific pieces have shipped in or shipping in Visual Studio 2010.NET 4.0.
So you're saying that .NET 4.0 is DLR, the DLR 1 shipped in that, or I guess DLR 4. We would call it. What do you call it?
Well, it's System Core, really.
Okay, so System.Core, it's inside there.
Yeah, so System Core has been updated with all the Dynamic Language Runtime expression trees and all the things mm-hmm. that dynamic language implementers would need to depend on when making their language.
Okay.
There's another set of APIs, the hosting APIs, which users would consume. So if you want to host one of these languages, those are not in the framework. So that's the piece of the DLR we left outside because we weren't done with
them. Okay. So let me see if I understand this then. So I want to make Scott.net. I can do that on .NET 4. Without adding any references to any strange DLLs. Once I've got system and system.core, I'm doing my thing.
Yep.
Then Jimmy wants to write an application that happens to host the Scott.net scripting language. You then bring in system.what?
You bring in Microsoft.scripting.
Microsoft.scripting. Okay, yep. So Microsoft.scripting is the out-of-band hosting
yep.
stuff.
And we've actually frozen that API. So we've done all the due diligence to ship it in the framework. We just weren't satisfied with the quality at the time, but now we are.
Okay. So where do I get that?
So that's available both. So main place is dlr.codeplex.com.
Okay.
It is also part of Ruby and Python's, Iron Ruby and Iron Python's distributions, but the latest one's on dlr.codeplex.
Okay. Now, if I'm using .NET 3.5, what are my DLR options?
There's also a build for 3.5 on dlr.codeplex.com, which gives you Microsoft scripting.dll as well as Microsoft scripting.core.
Oh, okay.
.dll, which is exactly the same source code that we moved into System Core. In fact, it's System Core.
Just renamed?
Basically, everything that is in System Core is now in that assembly.
Okay. So I can understand that System Core is supported because it's going to ship with 4.0. So that means that if I'm a company that wants to use dynamic languages, it's totally a supported thing.
You've got your 10-year support contract, 10-year right?
Support.
It's in the framework.
Now, but if I want to use it on 3.5, I'm going to go to Codeplex and get this.
Yep.
What's the relationship there?
That's just an open source project and MSPL licensed, but
so even though it's identical, when I'm running under 3.5, it's effectively yet another open source library that I would use, and I have all the guarantees that open source provides.
Yes, exactly.
Cool. Which is exactly
you have all the benefits that open source provides, right?
Are you going to keep those in sync, or is that the end of that?
Yeah, so those are going to be in sync. Now, I don't foresee a lot of changes to the core soon. I think we're going to be doing more innovation in the hosting APIs.
Mm-hmm.
Now that while they're the hosting APIs that a user consumes are hardened. I said we did the due diligence to get those in the framework.
Okay.
What we didn't do is the due diligence on what a language implementer would have to do to interface with the hosting API. So we're still working out those kinks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the main reason why we didn't put it in the framework. But that's where most of the work will be done in the future. But any changes that'll happen on the Codeplex side mm-hmm. will be moved in the framework. What's in the framework is moved in the codeplex, vice versa.
So how does that affect the development of Scott.NET? As a language developer, if I go and invent this new language, the fact that some of the things aren't baked on the hosting side, does that change my life at all?
It shouldn't. So very rarely, do we actually make breaking changes. It's just more about, making it easier, right? So, you know, if you want to take, you know, new dependencies on whatever the new things we'll be doing, that's great. But as far as, breaking changes, we try not to make those a lot. But in the hosting API, as far as what your users would consume, that won't break. Mm-hmm. So you can at least, you know, if you as a language implementer have to take some pain, you know, your users won't have to even rebuild. So.
What are some languages that are dynamic languages? There's Ruby and Python, but what other ones are people really actively working on?
So PHP is considered a dynamic language also.
But like .NET implementations.
Oh, .NET implementations.
Like, well, I want to understand what's sitting on the DLR.
Oh, sure. The two. So there's a bunch of random things. There's a Scheme implementation, Iron Scheme. I don't really know how well of a Scheme implementation it is. Mm-hmm. It's almost a 1.0 release, but I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah.
And I'm not a Lisp or Scheme person. I'd have to ask Bill Childs about that. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, Bill actually wrote a sample, language for the DLR called Simple, which is like a weird, Scheme Python mixture.
So a complete sample that shows how to make a simple language.
Yeah. So a complete sample of how to make a language called Simple.
Huh.
It's, like I said, it's a Lisp and Python mashup, basically, of a language. So it's a, you know, that's cool.
That's cool.
There's also just recently, at least announced, was IronJS.
IronJS.
So an Iron JavaScript.
Wasn't there a JavaScript implementation of DLR?
Yeah, there was.
Many years ago?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when DLR was announced, this was like
Mix 06,
or something like that.
Mix 06.
Yeah, 06 yeah, or 07. I don't remember which one.
It was Mix 06.
Okay. So, when that was announced, there were four languages that were said that we were working on.
Right.
One was Ruby, one was Python. Ruby was the new one. And then we also said there would be JavaScript and there would be VB.
Mm-hmm.
JavaScript and VB turned out to be languages that we were just using as vetting of the design.
I see.
And what ended up happening was they were different teams that were maintaining them. So the VB team had a couple people who were working with us, and the JavaScript team at Microsoft had a couple people who were working with us. And we vetted the design with them. It was great. And, you know, JavaScript had other priorities, like, you know, with IE and VB with, you know, Dev 10. So we just, our schedules didn't align.
Okay.
So we used those languages as tests, basically, to verify that the DLR was a good framework to build upon. So the code in our internal repository is gone, as in broken beyond repair, right?
It's atrophied.
You know, for the past 4 years, we tried to keep them working, but I think last year we decided to pull the plug on JS, and VB we pulled the plug long before, just because it was too much for us.
And just to make sure that folks that are listening understand, this was a sample implementation of VB, VB script, probably?
It was called VB script.
Right.
Yes.
And this has nothing to do and no relationship at all with Visual Basic and Visual Basic 10 that ships in .NET.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just to make sure that folks
know. No relationship.
Okay. So then those are dead, but those are kind of off vestigial.
Yep.
Talk to me about Iron Ruby and Iron Python. Where is their status? I mean, are they still toys, or is it time to start doing some work?
So Iron Python's hasn't been a toy for a very long time, and Iron Ruby is definitely graduating out of toy phase.
Okay.
Even you know, for months it's not been a toy, I would
really
say.
Wow. Cool.
So Iron Python's current release is 2.6.
Okay.
2.6 was released at the end of December, and basically, it's compatible with Python 2.6. So the current version of Python and Iron Python are fully
really.
Fully
so it's compatible. It's a real thing. I mean, it's a complete Python distro.
Now the places where it's not compatible are where third party extensions to Python have been built that are written in C.
Mm-hmm.
Those like NumPy, for instance, that doesn't run directly on Iron Python.
What is this NumPy?
So
this
NumPy is
a
numerical computing library.
And this is a library that's just Windows specific or Iron Python specific?
No, it's Python specific.
Ah.
It's written in C. It does work on Windows. It does work on Unix, but, We don't support the C API that Python exposes.
Okay. Right? So if I understand, because IronPython sits in the DLR, which sits in the CLR, that means that IronPython is completely managed.
Yep.
This is the kind of the P invoke equivalent.
Yeah.
You've got a totally native library.
Yes, exactly. And while, you know, we don't even suggest bridging that gap because the P invoke, boundary would be very costly.
Uh-huh.
So what we suggest for people writing IronPython extensions, you just write them in C# and we can consume them. But there is a project called Ironclad, which is an implementation of the Python C API mm-hmm. on the CLR. So you can use this library to bridge the gap, but we don't support that. But that's the only place where IronPython falls over today.
Okay.
Everywhere else, as far as the compatibility in the language, and then integration with the .NET framework mm-hmm. is there. On Iron Ruby side, Iron Ruby's approaching a 1.0 release. We've been saying this for a while, but this time I actually mean it.
You have been saying this for a while.
So we released 1.0 RC.
So you really are close.
At RubyConf, which was in the middle of November.
Oh,
so we released the first release candidate. We're planning another one.
Okay.
In the beginning of next month.
That'll be February 2010 for those of us who may be time travelers or listening to this in the future.
Yes, exactly. So, and then we're going to, that'll hopefully not have another RC after that, depending on. Mm.
So what's the feedback? What's the vibe?
So it's a lot faster than it used to be, like a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still doing performance improvements. So the nice thing about an open source project and something where we can kind of run our test suite within the course of a couple days to see if we broke anything is we can make pretty significant changes even this late in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So though it's an RC, we've heard, you know, from the 0.9 releases when we were coming up to the 1.0 RC mm-hmm. that, you know, performance needs to be better, especially startup. So we've been working on startup,
mm-hmm.
Decreased startup time by half in the last release.
So I could read the code, but seriously for a second, let's pause, geek out for a second.
Sure.
How did you decrease the startup time? Why was it slow and how did you decrease it?
So do this little trick, both in Ruby and in Python.
First tell me why it was slow.
So it was slow because we were jitting call sites, which in the DLR is basically a signature of a method, right? But we were jitting those for every generic type that we used when starting up. And that turns out to be really, really, really slow. So we just delayed that JIT compiling until you're actually running the code rather than doing it at startup. So we would pre-compile these things thinking we were smart and we weren't. And it just shows how hard language implementations are.
Hey everybody, this is Scott coming at you from another place in time. No doubt you probably bump into testing tasks now and then in your work. And you know, writing functional tests is probably not your favorite thing. It's kind of difficult, takes time, and the results can be dubious. Well, get ready to start liking tests thanks to Telerik with the new WebEye testing framework. Building web automation tests is a breeze. You've got code automation with advanced ASP.NET Ajax and Silverlight applications. You can write a single test, have it executed against multiple browsers at once. You benefit from a rich API. There's link support, integration with Visual Studio unit testing, also NUnit, XUnit, and MBUnit. Not to mention the free wrappers for Telerik RAD controls for ASP.NET Ajax and Silverlight. All shipping with Telerik's new testing tool. One of the best features, the WebEye testing framework, which is developed by Art of Test, is it's absolutely free. If you've already got hooked on WebEye testing framework, start using it right away. Go to Telerik.com for more info. Thanks a lot. Would you say that you did a micro optimization, or you just took a bet that you were doing something to be faster and you just bet wrong?
So we knew, well, I don't know, because I didn't write that initial code. I'm not sure why it was like that, but how we found it was just from running Ruby applications and looking at their startup
uh-huh.
and then, you know, running the CLR profiler on our code and seeing where we were sitting and we, you know, just doing this unnecessary work in the JIT for a very long time. So just, you know, a matter of kind of looking at it and saying, oh yeah, we can remove this. So
what kind of Ruby apps are you running?
So that Ruby app was Interactive Ruby. It's the Ruby command line.
The IRB.
Program, IRB. Uh-huh. But we also do startup and throughput perf analysis on Rails, on, other web frameworks like Sinatra.
So what do you think? So Rails runs fine on Iron Ruby?
Yeah. So Rails runs fine. We actually have done a lot of work. We did a lot of work, about 6 months, six months ago for, RailsConf, to show real apps running on Iron Ruby. So the year before that, we showed the simplest Hello World thing working,
right,
which was like, oh my God, I don't believe we actually got this working because it wasn't stable, but we showed it and it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And a year later, we're running real apps in kind of, you know, almost.
Do they have to be changed to add in some Microsoft-y thing?
No. So the interesting thing is they ran unchanged, because Rails is database. So I should pop up for a second. We did have to, not add things to Rails, but add certain support, to things like the database adapters in Rails. For instance, Rails, has a SQL Server adapter,
right,
that talks through ODBC.
Oh,
and we wanted to talk to ADO.net.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
You don't want
to
talk to ODBC.
So we had to build a, it's actually, Ruby has a DBI, a database interface, API, which we then added a ADO.net implementation to. And then the SQL Server adapter for Active Record, which is part of Rails, that talks to SQL Server, now just supports, if it uses that version of DBI, it just worked. So we had to do those type of changes.
Mm-hmm.
But the apps don't have to change because Rails itself is database agnostic, where you want to build the database, it just, you use Ruby code to do it. And same thing with the web servers.
So help me out. What does this look like? Because I think a lot of the people who are listening have heard about Iron Ruby. They've read the blogs, but I doubt that the majority of people have downloaded this and set this up. So on Windows, I go get Iron Ruby from the DLR site at Codeplex. And then what happens?
So we have our own Codeplex site for ironruby.codeplex.com. You just click the download button. The default download's a zip file.
Okay.
And basically you just...
Not an MSI.
So there is an MSI in there too, mm-hmm, but the default's a zip.
Okay.
And you just unzip it to your C drive, and Iron Ruby sitting in there. The bin directory has all the Iron Ruby binaries, and you just double clicked ir.exe, it would give you a command prompt.
Okay. Which is the same as IRB?
Which is exactly the same as IRB.
Okay. Yeah. And then I can do interactive Ruby, I can teach my kid Ruby, I can do all that kind of try Ruby stuff. Okay. So now I want to make a Hello World Rails application. Then what do I do?
So then you'd, because Ruby, so Iron Ruby is a Ruby implementation. So we ship with all the things that Ruby would usually ship with. And one of them is a package management, program called Gems.
Wow.
And so you do, because you have the Ruby install there, you do gem install Rails. And Iron Ruby would then go to the Ruby Gems repository on the internet, download Rails, install the necessary, programs for you.
Okay. So I just want to make sure I understand. So gem.exe that you ship is a .NET application.
Nope. It's a Ruby app.
What is it?
It's a Ruby application.
It's gem.rb?
There's gem.bat and then gem, just gem, but it's a Ruby program.
Okay. So gem.bat calls.
It calls ir.exe with the program gem and sends the arguments along.
Good.
Yeah. So
maybe obvious to you, but not necessarily.
sure.
So then when you start bringing down Rails, then you're bringing down Ruby code, straight Ruby code.
Yep. Yep. And you're running Ruby code at that time.
And then what's the name of the web server that Ruby uses? It's been a while for me.
So
Rails rather. It's been a long time.
So Webrick is the default, web server. There's a bunch of other web servers, like Mongrel and Thin, et cetera. You can actually use Cassini though on Windows.
Cassini is the code name internally at Microsoft, or the old name for the Visual Studio web server.
You can still find the Cassini sample.
That is true.
Right?
That is true. Cassini is a beautiful thing.
Yes.
But let's say that I wanted to run this on IIS 7.
Yes.
Then what do I do?
So there's another binary, you download. We should package it up as a gem one of these days, but, it's something called ironruby.rack. And rack is a Ruby framework for abstracting away the web server from the web framework. So Rails, Sinatra, camping, You name it,
they
whatever.
Have such fun names. What,
yeah, I know.
You're just like, as far it. As I'm concerned, you're just like making, just making like random names.
Making stuff.
They've got
up.
Like, they've got like, you know, Chandler Bing and Serpico and, you know, you're just making names up as far. I have no idea if these are real things. Afterwards, I'm going to go and Bing for it.
Oh, fact check me. The random web frameworks that Ruby supports, mm-hmm. All support this shared rack. Framework, which is basically abstracting the request and response away. So we have a version of that for IIS. And that's how you deploy any Ruby rack-based web application on IIS.
So we had to make a better SQL Server driver that goes to ADO rather than ODBC.
Yep.
And an interface to talk to IIS 7.
Yes.
And it was that interface, is that using like ISAPI, or is it using like FastCGI?
It's actually an ASP.NET handler.
Rock on.
Yeah. So
why is it not FastCGI?
Because I didn't want it to be.
Good for you.
So FastCGI is great when you have two completely disconnected processes, right? So you have your web server and you have your application server, and you need to bind them together.
Right. This is what we use for PHP.
Exactly. So FastCGI talks across the process
right.
to communicate between the web server and it. Mm-hmm. Well, we have Iron Ruby. It's .NET, and IIS has the ASP.NET pipeline built right in, so we plug directly into that.
Oh, and you're in proc.
Yes. So your Ruby code is actually running in the same process that is running the ASP.NET app.
That's cool. Does that make things faster?
It does, because we can utilize all of the optimizations that have been done for ASP.NET,
mm-hmm.
At least for the request processing.
Right.
We haven't done anything crazy like rewrite Rails' routing to use ASP.NET routing or anything crazy like that.
Yeah, I suppose you could though.
You could if you wanted, sure.
Yeah.
But so that was just the kind of design decisions as far as doing that. So the nice thing about deploying then is it's nothing different. It's no different than an ASP.NET app, right? Your Rails app has a web config in it.
Yeah.
Right. Which
copy it over, make an application pool and a vdir.
Exactly.
And boom.
Exactly. So that's all you have to do to deploy it.
Wow. So do you know of any live applications that are running Iron Ruby on Rails that are out there we can visit?
So this. No, because...
Well, maybe they're not telling you.
Yeah, well, so people are trying. Let's put it that way. So this Rails support that's really good with this new adapter and running on IIS is only been stable for the past couple months. So now people are starting to use it and starting to try to run their apps on it and reporting bugs. But we've had a lot of chatter on the mailing list about people trying and asking questions and whatnot. So, you know, hopefully they'll be... deployments in the near future.
What's the speed like? Like, I'm just imagining, let's say that you've got a .NET shop that's got IIS 7, but they've got one Ruby app that they need to run. Why would they want to bring it over into IIS and Iron Ruby? I guess probably because they have .NET expertise in that space.
So definitely .NET expertise, you know, teaching, not having to relearn how to deploy an app is crucial.
Right, and I'm sure maintaining it, managing it, and
exactly.
debugging it, and all that stuff is...
Yes, all the same. The deploying a Ruby app on Windows is very painful today using standard Ruby. You have to depend on FastCGI, which, you know, is okay, but it's not as easy as doing it on Linux. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, Apache has something called Mod Rails, which is essentially a native hook into Ruby to run Ruby inside of Apache.
Oh, so it's the equivalent of your
handler. It's the equivalent. And what's nice is, you know, this doesn't exist for Windows. This Apache handler actually isn't supported on Windows at all. So we have an interesting opportunity to say, you know, if you really want to run Ruby on Rails applications well on Windows, mm-hmm. Iron Ruby is the way to do it. So that would be why. You know, why someone would want to do it.
Do you think it's a really active community? Because I think that for the average VB and C# developer, you know, we know that the Iron Ruby and Iron Python are out there. We know Iron Python's more mature. It's not like you hear this promoted a lot. I mean, I think it's a pretty neat thing. I mean, that people should know about. But are you guys under the radar? Is there just like four or five of you guys and you're just like pounding this out and hoping no one notices that you're here? You know,
some days I feel like that, but
I mean, I think you know where I'm going with this.
I do.
You know
so
I mean, I know you're not like a VP that can talk about strategy of whatever.
Definitely.
But,
so
but you know what I'm trying to say.
So dynamic languages are actually pretty important to the team that is also the C Sharp and VB team.
Okay.
So C Sharp, VB, Iron Ruby, Iron Python, F Sharp are all part of the same team. We're under the same management. And because of Iron Python's, you know, kind of, been here first status, right? Yeah. We're definitely focusing on making Iron Python, you know, a first class language on .NET as far as first class dynamic language right. on
.NET.
So
it's extremely mature is what you're saying.
Yes. And really the only thing lacking right now with Iron Python is tooling. There's no Visual Studio integration and that, as much as it pains my heart, mm-hmm. Most .NET developers won't even look at it if they can't do file new project.
Well, and the thing,
right?
I think that speaking as, putting myself in the role of the public, from the point of view of the public, F Sharp came out of nowhere and jumped in to the new project dialogue.
Yep.
And, you know, Iron Python is kind of like Rick Moranis in Ghostbusters, where it's like, hey, how's it going? Hey, remember me? Hey, you know, why, what happened? Why are we Rick Moranis in Ghostbusters?
I don't know. I would say first off that F Sharp has a specific customer.
Scientists.
Who are going to pay money.
With
right?
coats.
Yes.
They have really nice white
Scientists
coats and they have
coats.
Money.
And money. And money is important. Not to say we couldn't sell,
no,
you know,
your point is taken.
Python or Ruby,
F
right?
F Sharp is a science and math language, definitely.
Yes. Now Python is too, which is interesting.
In academia, it's very popular.
So, you know, it was just the decision to, mm-hmm. to go with F Sharp. F Sharp had actually existed for a while also previous to it becoming part of
Visual
really? Studio,
because it
right?
did seem like it came out of nowhere, but it really was running under the...
So it came out of Don Syme, Don Syme's lab in, I think he's in Cambridge.
Yeah,
in Microsoft Research in Cambridge.
Right.
And he'd been working on it for a very long time, and it had existed for a long time. And it was only when people started hearing about it was when it was being productized, was the word that people were throwing around here.
Okay. So he right. he had the long haul too. It's like, you know, overnight fame really involves 10
exactly.
years of stand-up.
Because, you know, we actually had a lot of overnight fame with Python and Ruby that was almost unjustified, right? It was like, it was almost vaporware. Ruby was vaporware when we announced it, essentially, right? We showed
yep.
some little demo with no code.
Right.
Or at least no release code, I should say. And, you know, people were going crazy about it. And then, you know, 3 years later, we're finally getting to a
There's
release.
Something to be said for not telling anyone that you're working on.
Yes.
Something.
So, you know, the whole, way Microsoft releases software as far
right.
as, you know, doing it almost in a silo, right? We're definitely different than that. And we're seeing the, I guess the community react, you know, mm-hmm. differently to that. Some people love it and some people are like, well, just when it's in VS, tell me. Don't.
Right.
So, but, we're investing in Ruby and Python. You know, this is we're doing the kind of next round of planning for uh-huh. the next version of Visual Studio, which is kind of when everyone gets money around here.
Right.
And, you know, we're definitely involved.
So you're not going anywhere.
No, we're definitely involved in those talks. And Ruby is also, you know, planned to come along, right? We're not going to stop, mm-hmm. Investing in Ruby either. One of the nice things about Ruby and Python is they share so much infrastructure. We're a team of 7 people, both Ruby and Python.
Wow. Total.
And yeah. And we, so it's, but it's split down the middle. So we have 3 people working on Ruby, 3 people working on Python, and then one person shifting.
What about between. Community? Are you taking patches? Are you taking
so not to Python, but yes to Ruby.
So Iron Ruby is an open source project at Microsoft that takes code from the community.
Yes.
You hear that, people? It's a start.
And Iron Python has been forked more than once in the past, though those forks are no longer maintained. But people had forked Iron Python, calling it FePy. FePy, right?
Pie.
You know,
whatever.
As the mono compatible version of mm-hmm. of Iron Python, but now we actually Ruby and Python both run fine right out of the box on mono. So those
oh,
projects
yeah,
aren't
cool.
needed anymore. Actually, one of our release criteria for Iron Ruby is, you know, doing some testing on mono and making sure
really?
You know we tell mono about the bugs. Not that we, you know, we won't work around them if we think they're actually bugs in Mono. But they fix their bugs so fast. It's unbelievable.
Really?
Like days.
Yeah.
Days. It's crazy.
What are the sites that people can go to learn about the DLR in general and, you know, the DLR in .NET 4? And then where can they go to get IronPython and iRuby? Give me those URLs again.
So DLR.codeplex.com mm-hmm. has everything about the DLR. It has a bunch of documentation about if you were someone wanting to use it, how would you use it? If you're a language implementer, if you're a library designer and you want to use the DLR support to expose a more dynamic API, mm-hmm. right, using the dynamic keyword in C Sharp and whatnot. So that all that stuff is on dlr.codeplex.com, including links to more MSDN-like documentation, or the documentation that is on MSDN.
Hence MSDN-like.
Exactly. Ruby and Python, ironruby.codeplex.com and ironpython.codeplex.com both have the latest releases for both those languages, mm-hmm. Also links to documentation and whatnot. So that's where you go for all these things.
And then when .NET 4 ships in April, there'll be compatible releases for those?
Yes. So we are definitely committed for IronPython mm-hmm. to have a fully supported as in one of our major versions, you know,
right.
as much as IronPython is supported, version of .NET 4.
Cool.
For IronRuby, we're also aiming for that. We might have, it might be a CTP again until we, you know, can test things out because okay. we're trying to ship the first
but
version.
It's possible. There's a chance that it might happen.
Yeah, but we're trying to ship 1.0 right now.
And
adding .NET 4.0 to our test matrix is ridiculous.
Oh, so you're, so IronRuby is primarily 3.5 right now?
It's actually, so they all, run on 2.0 SP1.
Really?
We don't have any specific code for 3.5. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So when you run under 3.5, it even reports the version number as 2.0 SP1 because that's what we're linking against.
Hmm.
But .NET 4.0 version will be you have to use .NET 4.0.
Right, it would be a big deal.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for talking to me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.